All right, I think we're going to get going. It's really nice to see you all. I am Tressa Grauer. I'm the Vice President for Thriving Communities at Reconstructing Judaism, if you haven't met me before. Before I introduce our speaker, I want to invite the Thriving Communities staff who's here to give a wave. Wave, Thriving Community staff. I see Rabbi Elliot also, who's in, not waving, but he's there. There he is. There he's waving. I know I speak for all of us to say Shana Tova, that we're, I want to wish you all a sweet and a happy new year. I know, and my Micah just said, "Woo, we got through it." You've all, it's really important to say, I know all of you, if, many of you, if not all of you, have played some active role in your congregation's high holiday services this year. I hope they were successful. I hope they were meaningful. I hope that you're breathing a little more easily on this side of Yom Kippur. I'm delighted to welcome you all here to our first leadership call of the year, as we are going to be learning together with Keshet about transgender equity and some of the common biases and barriers that impact transgender and non-binary people in our congregational spaces. We are joined today, and you're gonna correct me. I'm gonna say Rachel Silverman Gittin. Is that right? Did I get that right? Okay, excellent. We are joined today by Rachel Silverman Gittin, who uses they/them pronouns, from Keshet, which is a nonprofit organization working toward LGBTQ plus equity and inclusion in Jewish life. Rachel is the New York educator and training manager for Keshet, and they come to us. They come to Keshet after serving with the Avodah Jewish Service Corps in D.C. and working as a community organizer and program assistant at the Jews United for Justice, among many other things. Rachel has also written about their experience and identities for several publications, including Medium, My Jewish Learning, the Jewish Women's Archive, Hey Alma, many other places to read about Rachel's work. And with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Rachel to do our teaching for today. I'm going to say one more thing, which is to say we are going to keep this room open for an extra 15 minutes beyond our normal slot time for additional conversation. If you have capacity to stick around, please stick around. But there will be a little bit of time for question and answers at the end. Okay, Rachel, over to you.
Amazing. Thank you. I just want to make sure that sharing my screen works. Do you see the pink? Lovely. Shana Tova. Hello, everyone. Thank you for the wonderful introduction. Again, my name is Rachel. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm Keshet's New York Education and Training Manager, though I am based in Jersey City, just over the border. Also proud to be a Reconstructionist Jew, so I'm so excited for this call today. So today we are going to talk about trans equity beyond the binary in the workplace and in our communities at large. First, what is Keshet? Keshet means rainbow in Hebrew, coming from the story of Noah, and we work for full equality and inclusion of LGBTQ plus folks in Jewish life. We do this in three main ways. My team, the education and training team, works with all kinds of Jewish institutions, from JCCs to summer camps, synagogues, day schools, and gives them the tools that they need to be affirming and inclusive, welcoming places. Our youth programs team is led by and for queer Jewish youth and young adults. So definitely check out their work for your communities if you haven't already. And last but not least, our community mobilization team upholds LGBTQ plus civil rights, both nationwide, both locally and federally. So you may see in the news that there are a ton of attacks right now, unfortunately happening, particularly on queer youth and particularly on the trans community across the country. Keshet has people taking action, mobilizing the Jewish community on these issues. And we also have recently started a new department. We've been doing racial equity and justice work for queer Jews of color for a number of years, but now we have a specific department doing programming and having a Shabbaton soon, more information to come, our first queer Jews of color Shabbaton for 18 plus folks. So that's going to be really exciting. Goals for this training are to understand some of the barriers impacting equity for trans and non-binary people, building awareness of some tools for increasing access, and tools for intervening in challenging moments for when we encounter anti-trans microaggressions or situations in our communities. Some Kava note, some intentions for the space we are creating together today is each one of us comes into this space with a different level of knowledge and experience of LGBTQ inclusion and the LGBTQ community. I'm naming that many people on this call may be queer and or trans themselves. Many of us may have loved ones who are part of the community, and many of us may just be new, ready to learn and grow and soak up all of the information and be the best allies that we possibly can. So we want an open environment where there is no fear of judgment in this space, where we can ask questions. I ask you if you have a question during the presentation itself, if you can write it in the chat, and I will do my best to check on the chat throughout the presentation. And we will have those extra 15 minutes at the end and hopefully a couple other minutes before that extra 15 to answer questions as well. And there will be some interactive moments in the presentation, but we ask that you are aware of how much space you take up with the mic. So if you responded to a bunch of prompts or asked a bunch of questions in a row, making sure that other folks can have their voices heard as well. We also ask, especially because this meeting is being recorded, to be mindful about what information you share, particularly about people's identities and about people in your communities and your congregations. So not sharing any identifiable information. And trust, intent, tend, impact. So if we say something, it may not sit well with somebody else. It may unintentionally cause harm. And we want to be able to name that, and in the spirit of accountability and growth and relationship building, tending to that harm and moving forward. So maybe adjusting the language that you were using, taking a moment of reflection on what it is that you've just said that it caused harm, and being able to move forward in the work together. Last but not least, staying present as much as possible, which I know can be quite challenging on Zoom. So if you can maybe have phones muted, not have other tabs open, please tend to your needs, get some water, go to the restroom, do what you need. But if when we're in this space together, we can be as present as we possibly can. And last but not least, to have fun building the world, not as it is, but olam haba, the world as it could and should be and will be. This liberatory world that we are building together is beautiful work, and it is holy work, where each person can show up as their full self in our Jewish communities. And I thank you for being here and being part of that work together with us. Yes, Reconstructing Judaism is part of the Thrive Coalition. Thank you, Rabbi Micah, which is part of Keshet's community mobilization team that works on LGBTQ civil rights nationwide. So shout out to Reconstructing Judaism for that. So just a little bit of a Jewish teaching and framework before we dive into the material is Keshet is rooted in many different things rooted in Jewish tradition that inspire us to take action for LGBTQ inclusion. And we in particular have seven values that we take a look at. And just two that we're going to look at today are Shalom Bayit and B'Tselem Elohim, which you may be familiar with. Shalom Bayit meaning peace in the home. Our community centers, synagogues, youth groups, and camps are often people's second homes, or maybe their first home, a place where people, they may not feel affirmation or welcoming in other places. And we want, when everybody walks through the doors of the communities that we are building, that they can show up as their full selves. Everyone needs to feel comfortable, safe, and respected at home. So we want each person to move through the world feeling that they are seen with their full dignity and full respect and affirmation and love in their Jewish communities. That would be beautiful. And with the value of B'Tselem Elohim from Bereishit in the creation story, where it says that each person has divinity inside of us. And I know people may have different relationships to Jewish text and tradition, different relationships to the divine. I think that regardless of how exactly you resonate and relate to that text, the really beautiful principle is that in Jewish tradition, we are holy not despite our differences, but because of our differences. That there is such infinite creativity in the divine creation, And what if we approached inclusion in this way? Instead of saying you are welcome in our community, even though you're trans, even though you're gay, we say you are welcome because you, as all of you, is holy and is beautiful and is worth celebrating and is worth affirming. And so just a moment of reflection to think of a time where you felt uncomfortable or unwelcome in Jewish spaces. What could have been done to help that situation? Or what do you think was underlying the work in that moment? Was someone making an assumption about you? Were they having some sort of bias against you? Was it just an unfamiliar environment? Were there different sort of norms in that space? So if I invite everybody to just take a second, feel free to journal or close your eyes or take whatever moment of reflection it is that you need and think of that time that you felt uncomfortable, unwelcomed, judged, ostracized, excluded in some sort of way in a Jewish space. I think many, if not all of us, can relate to that sort of a feeling. Now, I invite you to think of a time that you hopefully felt welcome and whole and seen in a Jewish space, where you felt celebrated, where you felt affirmed, where you felt you could be yourself without any sort of fear of judgment. And I invite you to take that reflection of what was different about these spaces. What sort of situation or bias existed in space one that wasn't in space two? What was different about these for you? And I invite a few folks to write in the chat. Feel free to reflect personally or together as a group. I'd love to read off a few responses. And also a couple folks can unmute themselves if that is best for you or if that's what you'd prefer.
We started off feeling like maybe people are still feeling like they're in Yom Kippur mode, but feel free to jump in and use your voice.
Yes. I'm also learning to lean into silences. Okay. Okay. Yes, I see in the chat, as a non-binary person, I often have very mixed feelings of being welcome or not welcome in, gender affinity spaces, women's philanthropy, women's Judaism. I have mixed feelings of that as well. And I hope it's okay to share here, even though it's being recorded, but I'm currently actually working on a resource with Keshet specifically about gendered spaces within Judaism, like sisterhoods and women's Rosh Kodesh groups and men's clubs, and like how we can think about trans inclusion in those spaces, because it can be really complicated. So many responses. Great. I got divorced many years ago and felt very unwelcome at my previous synagogue. I am so sorry that you experienced that. I hope that you feel more welcome, where you'll find a place of more welcoming and wholeness soon. In my former shul, the rabbi was not welcome of trans people. In my current shul, people welcome me, and I'm a valued member of the community. I've been challenged in more traditional spaces, but never in Reconstructionist ones. This was a plant for reconstructing Judaism. Just kidding. Not a plant. Wonderful. So happy to hear that. Felt unsafe at a Reform Jewish day school that my kids of color attended. It was not a smart choice back then. Maybe they've done some work. I think this goes with like microaggressions that we're going to talk about in this training. I generally feel very safe in my Reconstructionist congregation. I often feel uncomfortable and welcome in Orthodox shuls and feel more welcome in Reform and Reconstructionist ones. In spaces where I can relax and not worry about being perceived in a space, hearing language that makes me feel othered or being treated differently directly. Thank you. These were all really powerful examples, and I thank you for bringing vulnerability and reflection to this space. So we want to build this world where each person can show up as B'Tselem Elohim, that we all are being honored and seen and respected, that we're not feeling judged in any sort of that way, with the focus today on trans and non-binary folks and the LGBTQ plus community at large. And just briefly going through a little bit about the current landscape of the LGBTQ plus community, and particularly the trans community, to understand what is at stake. This section is like 2 minutes long, but it is a little heavy. So there will be mention of mental health disparities. So do what you need to take care of yourself in this space. Why support matters. This data is from the Trevor Project's 2023 survey results looking at mental health in LGBTQ youth and young adults. They found that fewer than 40% of queer young people found their home to be affirming. 53% of those in school reported being verbally harassed. 24% have been physically threatened or harmed in the past year due to their sexual orientation or gender identity. 60% felt discriminated against due to their sexual orientation or gender identity. National attacks on the LGBTQ community that I mentioned earlier. Over 500 bills attacking the trans community have been introduced across the country so far. And nearly one in three LGBTQ young people have said their mental health was poor most of the time or always due to anti-LGBTQ policies and legislation. This is also from the Trevor Project. And mental health disparities. 67% reported experiencing anxiety. 54% reported experiencing symptoms of depression. And 41% of LGBTQ young people and 50% of trans and non-binary young people have seriously considered attempting suicide in the past year. How can we make a difference? How can we change these statistics in our communities and in our personal lives? Factors that are proven to reduce suicide risk and improve mental and physical health and well-being and livelihood of LGBTQ people is respecting their pronouns, being an affirming adult in somebody's life, giving people access to gender-affirming restrooms, people having the ability to express themselves the way they want, like with their hair, like with their clothes, like with even Jewish ritual wear. Access to gender-affirming medical care, and affirming schools. Little psych lesson that you didn't know you were getting today is something called the minority stress theory. So what I don't want to perpetuate is the idea that to be LGBTQ means that you are more prone to anxiety, depression, suicidality, all of these disparities. It's that people of marginalized identities experience discrimination, exclusion, and stigma in their environment. And that is what affects the physical and mental health. And we have the power to change that environment. All of the people on this call as leaders of these communities, we can change these statistics. We can change the outcomes. And then thinking specifically in the workplace for our communities, trans and non-binary adults are at least twice as likely to be unemployed as cisgender adults. Cisgender employees, cisgender, we'll go over terms, review in a bit, means someone whose sex assigned at birth is the same as their gender identity. Cisgender employees make 32% more. More than half of trans employees report feeling uncomfortable being out at work. Two-thirds remain in the closet for work interactions outside of their company. Trans workers reported feeling less supported by workplaces and managers, less able to access benefits, and less able to be promoted. And there are persistent reports that supervisors or HR didn't respond to stop bullying or harassment. That was kind of heavy. It was kind of upsetting. So we're going to now talk about how we can change that environment. We can change these communities and proactively arm ourselves to build more affirming workplaces and places of worship and schools and all of those things. So just a very brief review, way more brief than we usually go in our trainings, of the LGBTQ alphabet, as we call it for Keshet. I am also putting in the chat the link to Keshet's LGBTQ terminology sheet, like our glossary of LGBTQ terms, so that you have that, and I'll send that for the follow-up email as well. There we go. That we won't be able to get to every term today, all of the nuances of all of these identities. Continuing learning, continuing doing work with Keshet. With the framework, of course, of intersectionality. So with the focus today on LGBTQ plus inclusion, people are more than our sexual orientation and our gender identity. We are our race, ethnicity, age, culture, body size, disability status, socioeconomic status. So many different things impact how we experience the world. And crediting Kimberly Crenshaw, Black feminist scholar who looked at the experiences of Black women experiencing workplace discrimination, who weren't getting justice based off of solely saying it was racism or solely saying it was sexism, that they were experiencing the unique intersection of those two oppressions at once. When we think of LGBTQ plus inclusion, we want to think of across all types of oppression and systems that exist in our communities. So for instance, gender neutral restrooms. My spouse is non-binary and prefers to not use the men's room or women's room and to use a gender neutral restroom. My spouse also uses a wheelchair. In many synagogues that we've encountered, the gender neutral restroom is this teeny tiny little closet thing that is not ADA accessible and will not fit a wheelchair. So in that moment, there's an intersection of my partner's gender identity and ability status. And what are we thinking about trans people with disabilities as well? What are we thinking about LGBTQ plus people of color, LGBTQ plus youth and aging populations and people of all of these different intersections of identities, and keeping that in mind as we go through our programming policy and our culture. So very briefly, the LGBTQ plus terminology from Keshet through sex assigned at birth, gender identity, and sexual orientation. A million terms are about to appear on this slide, and apologies. They're not in alphabetical, they are in alphabetical order. They're not in any other order. There are many identities that are not even on this slide. So starting with sex assigned at birth. Sex assigned at birth is something that usually a medical professional says when somebody is in utero or shortly after they have been born, taking a look at somebody's anatomy and declaring if somebody is assigned male or female at birth. About 1.5% of the population are intersex, which means that their biological characteristics, which could be chromosomes, could be hormones, could be, genitals or other anatomy, don't neatly fit into the categories of what society expects for male or female. One common misconception is that people are assigned intersex at birth. That is almost always not the case. Actually, people who are intersex are usually still assigned male at birth or assigned female at birth, and that is what is on their birth certificate. And often folks who are intersex, their parents are pressured by the hospital to have procedures performed on them so that their body looks in a way that society expects for male or female folks. Many people don't even know they're intersex until much later on in life. There's deep stigma about people being intersex. And many intersex people consider themselves to be part of the LGBTQ plus community. That's why you may see an I, the I standing for intersex. And that's one of the reasons we have that plus there to encompass identities other than LGBTQ, because it is a big community. But of course, no community is a monolith. So there are many, not everybody considers themselves to be part of the community. Gender identity is what somebody develops a bit later in life, and it's how they relate their gender, which is in their kishkas. They feel it in this inner sense of self. It's not on their body. There's no way to see it. And the categories that are in their culture that we have for gender identity. So in our Western society, we usually have man and woman with the gender binary, meaning the idea that there are only two genders, man and woman. many people like myself don't fit in that gender binary. I do not identify as a man and I don't identify as a woman. The word non-binary is a broad category. Some people feel like they are a third category of gender. Some people feel they have no gender at all. Some people feel they are both a man and a woman or something else entirely. There are many different ways that people relate to this terminology and that they personally identify. And these other terms that are on the slide, like agender, gender fluid, gender queer, there's also demigender, demi-boy, demi-girl. These are all subsets of the word non-binary that more specify what type of non-binary identity people identify with. Don't have time to delve too much into the terminology today, but please check out Keshet's LGBTQ terminology resource that I put in the chat that does have definitions for all of these words and more. The relationship between someone's sex assigned at birth and gender identity is when we talk about the term cisgender and transgender. Cis is Latin for on the same side, and is if somebody's sex assigned at birth is the same as their gender identity. The doctor says, it's a boy. And when the person develops their sense of gender, they say, yeah, I am a boy. So that person is cisgender. Transgender is when someone's sex assigned at birth is different than the gender identity that they develop. The prefix trans being Latin for across or beyond or on the other side. Many people who are non-binary also identify as transgender, such as myself. But there are some non-binary people who don't identify as transgender. So even the binary of cisgender and transgender is imperfect and doesn't encompass everybody, because there are some people who don't identify as cisgender and don't identify as transgender. We'll delve a little bit more into trans identities. Sexual orientation, two types of attraction. Romantic attraction, who you emotionally feel that romantic connection with, and sexual attraction of who you are physically attracted to be intimate with. Some people do not experience one or both types of this attraction, or their romantic attraction may be different than their physical attraction. Many terms that are on here, asexual, bisexual, gay, lesbian, pansexual, queer, straight, or heterosexual, and there are many more. Check out the terminology sheet. One thing I will talk about for a second is queer. For many people, when they grew up, or even now still, the word queer was understood as a slur. That was something that was an insult, that was something that was painful for many communities. It is for that case that many people don't use the word queer for themselves, who are part of the LGBTQ plus community. And many people have reclaimed this word and feel that queer is a sign of resistance. It has a bit of a political connotation of fighting against oppression and for liberation. And also many people, particularly younger folks now, many, not all, like the word queer because of it being a broader category. Like, I don't need to exactly tell you what my gender identity or sexual orientation is. I'm telling you that I'm part of the LGBTQ plus community, and I'm saying that I'm queer. Not getting into the specifics of it, queer. We recommend at Keshet not using the word queer for a particular person unless you know that that person does identify with that term, because for many people, it is still painful and is something that they have not reclaimed. Any questions about the triangle? I'll just take a couple of them. You can either unmute yourself or write in the chat. Okay, moving on, but continue to put in questions throughout. More gender terms. So as I said, gender identity is that inner self-knowledge of the gender you identify with, which is different than gender expression of how you express and perform your gender to the world. So how you style your hair, your clothes, your makeup, inflections in your voice, how you cross your legs, things like that are all part of gender expression. Gender roles and stereotypes are talking about how expectations for each gender differ based on time and differ based on place. So like what boys being blue and girls being pink and women not being able to wear pants for a while, or all these expectations, these things shift and change over the years. Thank you, feminism, for progress that we have made. women can wear pants, or even expectations of, like, in Jewish life, of what does a rabbi look like, and what do men wear, and what do women wear, and things like that, and progress that we've made. And I know the Reconstructionist movement has been, you know, behind a lot of this progress we've made in Jewish places. And there are still expectations in many communities of what Jewish leaders and thinkers look like. And based on culture. So in many communities, particularly in indigenous cultures, there are actually gender expansive categories. And it's a part of colonialism that has imposed these Western ideas of gender categories onto these cultures, that it's actually, like, been a form of violence, of, like, this is what it's like to be a man, what it's like to be a woman, and there are only two genders, and these are the expectations within those genders. Gender attribution is when we take a look at somebody and make assumptions about what gender they are based on how they look, based on how they sound, based on what their name is. And it's something unconscious. So many of us just automatically do it. And we really want to shift away from doing it, because not only can we be wrong, we can really harm somebody by making that assumption. Somebody asked me, is it offensive to refer to biological sex rather than sex assigned at birth? Great question. So the reason we say sex assigned at birth is because it's an outsider that is assigning it to you. Where biological sex makes it seem like it is that it is something that is actually fixed and something that is there. While your anatomy absolutely does exist, and you have hormones and you have chromosomes, I hope, and all of those things are part of your biology. The sex assigned at birth is something that is put on your paperwork, and that your community and grownups and everybody are raising you with, based on assumptions that was made when you were born. So we went to shift that sort of a framework. Instead of it being like, this is, you know, definitely of who you are, this was a thing that was given to you by somebody else that you were socialized with through your community, which is a part of the intersex inclusion and awareness that we want to have. Of, for example, how somebody may be intersex, but this was what they were assigned by somebody else. Okay, so now just diving a little bit deeper into transition, into the trans community, because we're focusing on trans identities today. Many people, when they talk about trans people, they focus on the transition. Did they have the surgery? Are they a real woman now? Those sorts of questions. And one, those sorts of questions are invasive, and we don't want to focus on trans people's anatomy and bodies, and it's inappropriate to ask people those sorts of questions. And also, you don't need to have any sort of steps in order to be a trans person. That's actually a common misconception that many people have. To be trans is for your gender identity to be different than your sex assigned at birth. It has nothing to do with what steps you have taken. Many people also don't use the term transition because it implies that there is a set course where you have to check X things off in order to be done. Some people use affirmation because of that, to affirm who they were all along. There isn't a correct way to transition. The things people do to affirm their gender identity varies over time and is individual, and there isn't the correct way to look, to be queer, to be trans. Here are some of the different steps that people take, like medical steps, like hormone replacement therapy, puberty blockers, gender affirmation procedures, socially transitioning, like changing your name, changing the pronouns you go by, and legally transitioning, changing your name on legal documents, changing your gender marker on legal documents, which is not legal in all states. And as many of us know, the rights to do these things are under attack in many places in the country right now. And even in places like I'm in New Jersey, where I'm lucky enough, to be able to have a gender marker X on my ID because I don't identify as a man or a woman. And it is expensive to get any of these changes. Insurance can deny medical claims. There can be legal barriers. There are so many different barriers that keep people from getting the affirming care that they want, medical or legal, or even social, if they aren't in an affirming environment where they can be free to go by the name and pronouns that they use for themselves. And this isn't a checklist where you have to do all of these things to be a real woman or a real man or a real non-binary person. These are, some people don't want to do these steps and some people can't access these steps. Now moving on to language and pronouns, because this is a huge way that we can be inclusive to folks that are in our community. So being mindful of language by, instead of saying ladies and gentlemen, sir, guys or gals, friends, chevre, folks, everyone, y'all means all. And for you, this sort of language respects and acknowledges the gender identities of all people and removes assumptions about who is in your room. Congregants, everyone. Are how we refer to people in the third person. In our English language, the pronouns we usually use are she and he. Here on the screen is a chart that will make you hungry because it has different types of Jewish foods with different example conjugations of pronouns. Many people like myself use they, them pronouns as a gender neutral third person option. Rachel, they came from Cachette. They were wearing a tan, this isn't tan, peach shirt. Their presentation was awesome. I'm assuming you're saying my presentation was awesome. Those are different ways to conjugate they, them pronouns. Many people use neo pronouns to have other gender neutral options other than he, she, or they. Two examples on the screen are Z here and Z, Zier. There are many other pronouns. I'm learning new neo pronouns every day from different folks in the community. And there are people who use multiple sets of pronouns. So someone may, for instance, say, my pronouns are he and they. And you say, Rachel, which one do I use? Well, you can check in with that person. Do you prefer he or do you want to use them interchangeably? Some people use them interchangeably when they use multiple sets of pronouns. Some people say, oh, thank you. I actually really love they pronouns and feel seen when people use them. And I tolerate he. So thank you for asking. I will send as a follow-up for folks Keshet's pronoun practicing tools where you can practice filling in the blank sentences and conjugating different sets of pronouns. There may be new people. There may be people in your life who use sets of pronouns that are new for you. So using them consistently and respectfully, even when they're not there, and it's okay to mess up. If you mess up, correct yourself briefly, not making a huge deal about it. Oh my goodness, I am so, so sorry. I'm really, really trying. I went to a Keshet webinar, I'm an ally. But saying, I am so sorry, he, not she, or correcting yourself in the sentence, and then later dedicating yourself to practicing and learning. And if you witness somebody else messing up, gently correcting them. And if you share your pronouns, that is a great way to be an ally as well, because it takes the burden off of people whose pronouns are always regularly disrespected, so that they are usually the first or the only ones sharing. And it helps normalize sharing pronouns and that we can't guess what pronouns somebody has. What we don't recommend is making pronoun sharing mandatory. So everybody has to say this when we're going around the room. Everybody has to put this on their name tag, because some people may not feel comfortable outing themselves. They may be questioning their pronouns. They may just not feel comfortable for whatever reason sharing what pronouns that they use. And having the incorrect pronouns used for you, it adds up again and again and again, and feels like a little bit chipping away at you throughout the day. It may seem like just a subtle little thing, but speaking as a trans person, it really impacts my well-being and sense of self every time somebody uses the wrong pronouns for me. And unspoken norms and systems. So this is just a quote I love from Ajima. Oh, actually, let's just take a break for a second. What questions do we have about pronouns? Feel free to put in the chat or unmute yourself. Okay, since seeing no questions right now, I'm going to move us on. So every time you look through something and it's easy for you, look around and say, who is it not easy for? And what can I do to dismantle that system? Ajima Olu, so you want to talk about race. Often, especially people who have privileges, may not be aware of different systems that exist in society. Like, as a white person, I am not aware of my whiteness nearly as much as people of color are, because I'm not the one experiencing racism and micro and macro aggressions on a daily basis. So looking at these systems for the LGBTQ plus community, we talk about cisnormativity and heteronormativity. Cisnormativity, cisgender again, meaning that someone's sex assigned at birth is the same as their gender identity, is the assumption that to be cis is the norm, that you are cis until you are proven trans, feeding into a system that benefits cisgender people and disadvantages trans people. Similarly, heteronormativity is the often unspoken assumption that to be straight or heterosexual is the norm or the default, feeding into systems that benefit straight people and disadvantage the LGBTQ plus community. So prompt for you all is, what examples of cisnormativity or heteronormativity have you seen in your communities, or could you imagine that exist? So where everybody was assumed cis until proven trans, where everybody was assumed straight in a community. Feel free to put in the chat. Feel free to unmute yourself. I also see a question, when is Z used? Great question. So you, what we want to get out of is not assuming what anyone's pronouns are and using gender neutral language for folks until you know what their pronouns are. So when I walk into a room, people hear me, they see my name, they see what I look like, and they automatically use she for me until I tell them, hey, it's they, them. So we want to break out of using that she for people based on what they look like or things like that. I see examples of lots of he or she, though we are working on it. Hebrew language for calling someone for an aliyah. Yes, ya'amod or ta'amod. Ta'amod, there are great, there's a gender neutral example. There are also na'amod. There are communities that I'm happy to send you a link to as a follow-up where you have cards that people being called for an aliyah put up so that the gabbai knows which language to use for them. So either by default using a gender neutral option, or like saying mi beit, like from the house of, as a gender neutral way for folks, or asking people in the moment which language they want to use for themselves. For mothers and forefathers. Yeah. And Hebrew is really gendered, right? That's like, we could have a whole other webinar on that. A struggle is, my youngest is non-binary and is constantly assumed she. Adults brush it off or disregard it. Disregard corrections. Yeah. People disregard it all the time, especially adults who disregard youth's identities, implying that that is some sort of a phase. That is really something we want to disrupt this myth and validate and affirm the young people in our lives. And I'm so sorry your child is experiencing this. Gendered ritual object policy is like, all men must wear kippot. Absolutely. I see a question, is there another option in addition to cis and trans? At the moment, I don't know of another option, but definitely we're always updating our PowerPoints as language is evolving. There are people who don't identify with cis and don't identify with trans. But I think it's helpful to know, when people tell you which language they use for themselves, what that language is referring to. Moving us on in the interest of time. So just into what exclusion or marginalization can look like in our communities. Overt forms of discrimination and oppression can be much more clear to see at the top of this glacier here. Of violence against LGBTQ people, overtly using a slur. If you say, we don't officiate same-sex marriage in our synagogue, or trans people are not welcome here. Things like that are very overt and easier to see, like a hateful thing being said that falls into lines of bullying. What then gets a bit harder is when there are more subtle things. when there are microaggressions, when things that don't fall in line as bullying or discrimination or harassment happen. And then what are sort of more covert things are whether there's representation in the classroom, whether you use people's affirming names and pronouns. Things like, it's just a phase that somebody wrote in the chat that their child was experiencing, minimizing someone's identity, different types of bias, different dress codes that are applied differently to people of different identities, assuming that to be LGBTQ is something taboo or inappropriate or too sexual, assuming someone's gender, papers and forms. How many synagogue forms say husband or wife, or even assuming that a child lives with their parents as their grown-ups, saying parent one or parent two, or saying, you know, grown-up one, grown-up two, I just caught myself, someone may not live with parents, or instead of saying mom or dad on a form, things like that. Not challenging homophobic and transphobic jokes, microaggressions. So implicit bias is when we have attitudes, stereotypes, and assumptions that we aren't even aware of, particularly when under stress or in a hurry. So you may say, of course I am pro-gay marriage. I am pro-LGBTQ inclusion. And then in the moment, when a woman tells you, oh, my fiance is picking me up, you assume that that fiance is a man. Because that implicit bias was fiance, a man and a woman. That's the couple. Microaggressions are everyday subtle, most of the time unintentional, interactions that communicate that bias. They may be meant as a compliment. They may be meant as a joke. Adam, who used to be Sarah, came over for dinner the other day, meaning it is something very subtle, but that actually disrespects Adam's name and identity and can out Adam as trans and potentially put Adam in danger. When you go home to your mom and dad, assuming all children in the class have and live with a mother and a father. I'm not transphobic. It's just confusing or too difficult to use singular they pronouns. What sort of message does that send about how one's own comfort or sense of correct grammar is more important than another person's dignity? He came out. It's what all the kids are doing these days. Invalidating this identity and implying that it's a trend or a phase. This is so much work for such a small minority. Implying that dignity for LGBTQ people comes at the expense of non-LGBTQ people, and that it's a burden to affirm and treat people with respect. And these sorts of things can often be really hard to get accountability for in organizations and communities, because, like I said, they don't fall under that overt harassment or discrimination. But these things are a big deal. Microaggressions have psychological impact associated with mental health disparities, associated with physical symptoms, making environments less affirming and validating. And those who experience microaggressions are often told they're overreacting, they're too sensitive, aggressive, or they're pressured to minimize or deny the incidences. So acting out against this, owning that we all have biases and fear, and not feeling shame for that, seeking out interactions with people who differ from you, but not in a tokenizing way of, oh, I really need a gay friend or I need a trans person in my life. It's a balance. Trying not to get too defensive when you were called in for saying something that caused harm. Discussing your attitudes and biases, being open to learning more, and being an ally when you witness bias and discrimination. So our very last section, because I know we are coming close on time, and I want to make sure that we get to the last couple of examples of workplace equity, is what we think about for creating LGBTQ plus affirming communities, particularly synagogues. At Keshet, we do this through the lens of talking about programming, policy, and culture. So for programming, do we have regular programming on LGBTQ themes, LGBTQ speakers and presenters? Regular programming on these themes, there are LGBTQ days of significance, Pride Month, National Coming Out Day, Trans Day of Visibility, Trans Day of Remembrance, Bisexual Awareness Week. All of these days, and there are Jewish days of significance, like there are queer readings for many different holidays, or do you have a queer Seder, or talk about, you know, like a shamnu for trans rights at your communities. LGBTQ speakers and presenters, but here's the kicker. They don't only talk about being LGBTQ because we want to show up as being our full selves. So just because someone's trans doesn't mean their tech study is on gender. Their tech study can be on the environment. It can be on art. It can be about body liberation, so many different things. And we also find it really helpful to have an active affinity space for people who are part of the queer trans community. Affinity spaces can be really helpful because they give people the opportunity to socialize with another, be in community with another, vent with one another, and if they choose, to make institutional change. Policy, trainings for staff, board, and leadership. Making sure that somebody is in charge of the diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging work, that is owned by a staff member or someone on a board or a committee. Having explicit non-discrimination, anti-harassment, and anti-bullying policies. Thinking about dress code and Jewish ritual wear and how this works and not being held differently to people of different gender identities and being inclusive with these policies. Making using someone's pronouns and language mandatory. And equitable access to programming and facilities for trans folks. And thinking about privacy and confidentiality, particularly for youth when they come out. So like protecting that confidentiality and not outing somebody if they do not want to be outed to different folks. And lastly, culture. So thinking about your representation. Do LGBTQ plus people have full access to your community, different committees, to leadership and participation? Are we doing outreach to the queer and trans communities that are in our area? Do we have resources available for queer people and for loved ones of those who are? Like ritually, legally, intimate violence-wise, PFLAG groups, things like that. Language and communications, membership forms, registration forms, your website, your brochure, and are you taking action on LGBTQ plus civil rights? In a 501c3 friendly way, of course, but taking action nonetheless. I am happy to send this to you of this LGBTQ spectrum of belonging, of openly hostile communities to communities of belonging. I find that a lot of people think that they've reached the pinnacle of inclusion, but they're really intolerant or inclusive, where they accept LGBTQ people, but don't want them to be obtrusive and don't really go out of their way to proactively be inclusive. Tolerance isn't the peak anymore. Inclusion isn't even the peak. Belonging is now the peak. And just let's close with looking at one example of one of your coworkers has recently transitioned at work. You notice that even as most people have gotten used to their new pronouns, their manager consistently uses incorrect pronouns. And when getting corrected, the manager laughs, gets flustered, says it's so hard. They, them pronouns are just not what she is used to. And you were in a meeting and the manager introduces your coworker by the wrong pronouns. So what would you do in this sort of a situation? I'd love for someone to unmute themselves and share how they would respond. So I would say that, leaning into the silence, but also being mindful of time, that this could be a good training opportunity, professional development opportunity for people in your community. Also intervening and correcting in the moment when those incorrect pronouns are used, and checking in with this coworker who is being misgendered and seeing how they're doing, how you can best support them, and what they want next steps to look like, and really putting the ball in their court and having this be collaborative, but also looking at this as an institutional issue of somebody being misgendered. And I'll send this to everybody with all of the examples, but the second example that we had was about a microaggression where somebody is trans and somebody says, "Wow, I never would have guessed you're trans. You look so good. When did you transition?" A good example of a microaggression, because this was meant as a compliment. But what message does that send? That actually sends the message that to appear to be cisgender is the ultimate goal. and that being cisgender is better than being transgender and what we should aspire to. So both holding ways for that, how a comment like that is hurtful and unwelcoming, but knowing intent versus impact, and that there was good intent here. And we're not canceling anybody. We're not calling anybody out. We're making an opportunity for education with the perpetrator of the harm and checking in with the person who was harmed to see how they're doing. And then thinking of that institutional change and further learning opportunities. And then just for HR and executive director type of folks in the group, the last example was one about IVF, of fertilization, and a policy that was cis normative, that assumed that people were on maternity leave or paternity leave, and assuming that women were the ones who were giving birth. So what do you do if you then have a non-binary person or a transgender man who is going to be pregnant and this policy doesn't actually apply to them? So this is a conversation with your insurance and your HR and making sure that you communicate these changes that need to be made. That's something that many people don't even think about, of does it assume that women are the ones who are giving birth in your HR policy? And that brings us right to 159. I'm sorry we were rushing through a bit at the end, but this was all really important to get through. I am so thankful for you all being here and joining in with your thoughts and questions. I saw the great interaction that was happening in the chat, and I will stay on for that extra 15 minutes to answer questions that you have or further things that have come up for you. Thank you so much for being present and here in Shana Tova again.
Rachel, thank you so much for a really rich and thought-provoking conversation. I know that there are lots of questions that went unanswered. There'll be time for that. I want to make sure before everybody signs off that you know that there is a leadership call again. Our next leadership call will be on October 18th. There'll be a link to the chat in the chat to that call so that you can register for that. And remember also that your liaisons are available to you if you have questions or thoughts about what you want to do next for the in your congregations. So thanks again to Rachel. For those of you who need to sign off, feel free. And for those of you who want to stick around and talk with Rachel and talk together as a group, we invite you to stay. Thanks so much.
Stuart, yes, I see your hand is up. Then I'll go to you, Stephen.
Thanks. I'm curious how you would react. A year or two ago, I had a glass of wine in the backyard with a disgruntled congregant whose, at the time, probably 11-year-old daughter was in a Sunday school class that had an LGBTQ teacher who liked to talk about LGBTQ. And this fellow was suggesting to me rather vociferously that this is not something he wants his daughter to hear. And I'm wondering, how should I have reacted to that?
Yeah, that's really tough, especially just in the moment too. I've heard lots of things of like in an own egg and then somebody just dropped something like that. A few different things, that there's a lot of myths out there that the media and what's going on in politics are making worse about people thinking that LGBTQ plus content is inappropriate for youth and inappropriate for schools. And I think disrupting some of those myths of like, no, it doesn't turn them queer. No, none of this is a phase. Like, this is like people are experiencing affirmation and belonging and important education in these schools. And then I think going back to like, if you have time for that educational moment, or if it seems like the right opportunity given your relationship, to like the Trevor Project statistics that we looked at, of like, actually, what I'm really worried about is the number of LGBTQ plus kids who don't feel safe in school or don't feel like they belong. and the number of types of, you know, cis normative, not using the word cis normative, that would lose somebody, but like the ways that ideas of homophobia and transphobia are taught to kids in school. And then they're taught that being straight is the norm and that that is the right way of doing things. And I think if somebody out of in the, you know, leader or clergy role or whatever hat it is that you're wearing, understanding where their fear is. Like, is it that they heard something on Fox News and they are parodying it off and you want to put them at ease that no, actually those aren't things that are happening in the classrooms, or this is actually why having that affirming thing is really important, because it may be that there is genuine misinformation that is going on. If someone is thinking this is incompatible with my Jewish tradition or my Jewish practice, then I think that sort of thing, if it seems that there is like more genuine homophobia or transphobia that is underlying that, that it isn't just a misconception, also approaching with that curiosity to understand where their fear is coming from, and then sticking to what the values are of your community. Do you have a mission or inclusion statement? Do you have something that says this is what we value and LGBTQ plus people belong here? And that starts with the littles in early childhood education, of knowing that all sorts of people belong and are welcome. And if somebody doesn't align with where the mission statement or the values is, then that onus is really on them of whether they feel that this is the best community for them.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hope that was helpful. Yes, Stephen, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. This is incredible, just amazing information and so valuable today. We had a situation happen here in Ashland. We're in Southern Oregon, and we have a local hot springs that was holding an event specifically for women who had suffered sexual trauma and wanted to experience a clothing optional event in a male genitalia free environment. They allowed trans people as long as they were fully transitioned to female, and that didn't sit well with a lot of local people. And a few of our congregants came to the rabbi asking for the synagogue's support in a protest against the Wellsprings. The reason that it was sort of more important to us is because part of the property hosts a mikveh. We're not responsible for it. We're not directly affiliated for it, but we do make use of that mikveh. So it was concerning to us, is do we need to revise our policy about using the mikveh of a local business that holds policies that may be construed as against the values that we hold as a synagogue? And it was confusing, because you got, you know, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, so there were a lot of different needs that were trying to be met that didn't seem like it was a situation where everyone's needs could be met correctly. And I'm wondering what you think the response to a synagogue should be in that kind of a situation.
Oh, wow. There's so much going on there. Thank you for bringing that. I think that two main threads are going on for me. The first is about, I understand and like am currently working on a resource for Keshet about like women's spaces and gender affinity spaces being really important, particularly for people who have experienced gender violence. And I went to a women's college. Like, I get it. I identified as a woman when I first went to a women's college. And I think that it is really important to hold that a space specifically for women needs to be a space that is explicitly trans inclusive. And trans inclusive means that there is no check on anybody's anatomy of what transition steps they need to have taken. That being said, it is very real for there to be, you know, pain and discomfort around people with certain types of anatomy. But I think that being really explicit about, sorry, I'm like, oh, my brain is going in a few different ways, because then you brought up mikvah, and I have a lot of thoughts about mikvah too, because there's something like if with a mikveh, we're specifically saying this is a space for people who menstruate, then that is a space for people who menstruate. And like, there are lots of complicated things with like woman's hour at a mikveh and whose bodies go there and what does nida mean, because trans men can observe nida and so can trans women and so do non-binary people. Open Waters Mikveh Network and Mayim Chaim doing incredible work about this. They can probably speak to this way better than I can. I think where it gets really hard is when it is the like people who have experienced trauma from gender violence, and that there often is a kind of rift or sense of competition or contradiction between some cisgender women and of trans inclusion being seen as something that is like butting heads with one another, of like, we are vying for resources, we are vying to be seen and to belong in sense of communities, and really thinking about what does solidarity look like between these communities. If it's people who have experienced gender violence, trans people experience gender violence. Trans people experience gender marginalization as well. That's why, like, I think that there is nothing wrong, and it can be beautiful, with having a space that is specifically centering women, or a woman, like a woman specific space. And there can be spaces that are for lack of a better word, everybody but cisgender men. Like, if we're saying this is a space for marginalized gender identities, this includes cis and trans women, this includes non-binary and gender non-conforming people, this includes trans men, that's a bit of a nicer way of saying this is people who are marginalized for their gender in some sort of a way. And there are spaces that can still be women-centered, and it's up to, let's say, me as a non-binary person, of whether I feel comfortable or not entering that space. Because there are some, like, there's a woman's Rosh Kodesh group that said, Rachel, you're absolutely welcome, you can come. And I don't actually want to go to that, because that would make me feel uncomfortable and I wouldn't feel that I belonged or should take up space in a space that specifically wants to center women. And there are spaces that are like, this is specifically for all women and for trans people, and I want to be part of that space. I also want to raise, and this wasn't really what you were asking, but maybe helpful for other folks as well. If, like, you have a group that is, for example, talking about abortion justice, like reproductive justice and abortion care, that being open to one option is like, this is a space that is open to all people who are impacted by abortion bans, or all people with reproductive justice, in a way that could either be open to like the non-binary people and trans men who also can have abortions or need abortion care, reproductive care. And it could be a space that instead is like a working group, tech study, meeting group, whatever the space is, that is about reproductive justice, that is open to anybody of any sex assigned to birth and any gender identity. And more communities, I think, are shifting to it being around a theme instead of it being around people of identity. So, like, instead of saying this is closed just to women, saying this is a feminist, woman-centric space, or just this is a feminist space that's going to be studying women in the Talmud. Sorry if that made things more complicated. Did that help at all? Any follow-up questions from anybody that may have sparked?
It did help. Every person's perspective on this helps me a little bit more. I didn't fully understand why it was a problem that only fully transitioned women would be allowed, until someone explained to me the expense and the difficulty, and some trans who choose simply not to have a physical change to their body being different from how they identify their gender. And that really opened up my eyes in ways that I hadn't considered before.
And also, I want to also add the many trans women who can't access that care.
Exactly.
Because of it being, you know, difficult, hoops with insurance and expensive and things like that. Yeah, Kathy, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this whole hour and more. You know what occurred to me is that since trans for many people means transition, or at least it suggests transition. So, a lot of people who are trans have no intention of transitioning. So that makes it a little more confusing for everyone, I think. This just occurred to me, but I've always been a little bit, I asked the question about the cis trans because I don't know. I guess I'm referring to non-binary. Then maybe cis non-binary makes more sense to me. I don't know. I'm just questioning.
Yeah. So I think a couple things that came up for me with that is that, like, I identify as non-binary and trans because my sex assigned at birth is different than my gender identity. And non-binary people can also transition. Like, there are non-binary people who go on hormones or have puberty blockers or have different operations or procedures that are done, go by a different name, go by a different set of pronouns. I think that often people sometimes don't realize that it isn't just a transgender man who goes through that or a transgender woman, but many, you know, non-binary and gender expansive people go through those transition steps as well. And it's really just up to each person what terms they resonate with. I do see a really good question in the chat about how do you feel about using genderqueer in the same way some of us use queer as a broad, non-specific adjective. So the word genderqueer is actually not used as really the way queer is used with sexual orientation and gender identity. So the word queer, the way it is used now, is for anyone who isn't cisgender and anyone who isn't straight. Like anyone who falls in the LGBTQIA plus umbrella, falling into queer, if that is a term that they have reclaimed and feel comfortable with. Genderqueer, a specific term, is like a subset of non-binary that is under the umbrella of non-binary. Some people use genderqueer as synonymous with non-binary. For some people, having the word queer in there is a bit more radical, a bit more political, a bit more, I am not a third gender option. I am in a galaxy of gender. My pronouns have not been invented yet. You cannot categorize me. I am bending and twisting the system of gender, are some of the ways that I've heard genderqueer people describe the experience that they have. Which is why some people, you know, prefer to use that term than non-binary, because we really want to break out of, we went from a gender binary to we went to a gender trinary, and there are three genders, she, he, and they, where instead it's, there's a vast galaxy of gender and many different nuances and combinations of gender identity and expression. And I see we are at 2:16. So
and we want to respect your time as well, Rachel. I really appreciate you giving us this extra time, as well as such a wonderful presentation that I'm sure people will use and refer to within their communities. I just want to say a big thank you. Also, you jumped in at the last minute and want to recognize that that was a really, and we're really grateful for that as well. So thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me, Shana Tova. Feel free to reach out to Keshet for any further questions, resources, support. And if you want like a training for your congregation or anything like that, we are happy to work with you.
Wonderful. Thank you again.